So it's really a pleasure to present in this special symposium in honor of art. We really hope that he's going to hang around for the next 20 or 30 years and so and share some of his wisdom with us at the university. And before I start, I would like to acknowledge my co-author, my graduate student, Thomas Gebrenigus, who does most of the experimental work that I will present within the next few minutes. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the impact of physical-chemical boundary conditions on initiation evolution of surface crack networks in sand bentonite mixtures. The objectives of this particular study are to really gain some better understanding of how those surface cracks initiate and how they evolve with time based on the solution chemistry, based on clay content and also clay type, and also based on the dehydration rate or the temperature. And we also need to establish or want to establish a real solid database, so we basically need to get some ideas how pore spaces evolve to then develop some and parameterize models to actually model flow and transport processes in such soils or liner materials. The motivation for this is really, there's not really too much work out there that uses measurable soil properties to predict hydraulic properties, preferential flow phenomena in agricultural soils. And another big area where this research is very relevant for is the design of clay liners and clay barriers that you use to isolate hazardous waste. And there's a big demand for advanced design criteria. There's a study by the Environmental Protection Agency that indicates that about 220,000 contaminated sites within the United States, they are in the need of some kind of remediation, capping or lining over the next 30 years. So we try to work a little bit on this topic and provide them with some new insights into the design of those caps and barriers. Everybody knows that dealing with clays is not really a very easy thing to do because you're dealing with changes in volume and pore space, with shrink swell behavior, and associated changes in hydraulic properties. And when you look at clays, you really deal with a hierarchy of pore structures that start at the microscale or the mesoscale to the macroscale. And those pore spaces, they're interacting and basically affecting water retention and transport properties of such soils. And in this talk today, I'm mainly going to focus on the macroscale, on those surface crack networks. And we basically were really interested how the soil solution and clay content affect the development and evolution of those crack networks. So we started a very comprehensive series of experiments where we saturated sample to maximum water ratio. And then we dehydrated those samples under controlled temperature boundary conditions. And then we used X-ray computed tomography to scan those samples and see how those crack networks formed and evolved with time. So we were using sodium bentonite, ottobasilica sand mixtures, and calcium montmorillonite, ottobasilica sand mixtures in different mass ratios, ranging from 0% to 60% clay. And to get an idea about how monovalent and divalent solutions actually affect the cracking, we saturated the sodium bentonite mixtures with sodium chloride solutions at different concentrations. And we saturated the calcium montmorillonite mixtures with calcium chloride solutions at different concentrations. Prior to these experiments, we also, of course, needed to determine the maximum water potential. So we did this with volume change apparatus. And then, since we were also interested in clay liners, where we need to maintain a certain low permeability, we also tested all those materials for saturated hydraulic conductivity or permeability with a flexible wall permeometer. And I will show this a little bit later why this is important. So this is the experimental setup. We basically used the industrial infrared heater that was controlled by a temperature controller to maintain a constant temperature on the surface of those clay samples. The samples, they were 12 centimeters in diameter and 12 centimeters deep. we basically had to optimize the sample size, so we wanted to get as large samples as possible but still achieve a reasonable resolution with this X-ray computed tomography system. So the resolution we actually were able to obtain was 165 microns, which is sufficient to kind of distinguish macro bores or those cracks. And so we basically dehydrated those samples to kind of avoid any kind of radial gradients. We embedded those samples in styrofoam, and we had feedback from thermocouples that were mounted close to the sample surfaces to keep the surface temperature constant. And then initially, for the first 10 days after each day we took the samples out, we kind of determined the weight. And then we scanned them with this X-ray computed tomography scanner and put them back. And then after 10 days, we switched to 5-day intervals, because you're generating a huge amount of data, which is sometimes difficult to handle. So one scan generates about 30 gigabytes of data. So, and we scanned several hundred of those samples, which really generates a huge amount of data. And basically, this is the X-ray computed tomography system we use. This is a high-resolution industrial X-ray CT scanner that has a 225 and also a 420 kilowatt X-ray source. And basically, you have the X-ray source. Then you have the sample that rotates, and then you have the detector. And basically how X-ray CT works, you determine the sinograms that are dependent on the density differences in your sample. And then you use mathematical algorithms to reconstruct those sinograms to get stacks of grayscale images, so TIFF or PNG images. And in those particular scans, we obtained 1,480 single slices that we had to analyze. One problem with this kind of scanners is, because the sample rotates, you always get a little bit of ring noise, kind of artifacts that are due to scanning, so you need to remove those artifacts by filtering. So what we usually do, we transfer those images into a Fourier spectrum. And since this kind of noise is kind of periodic, you can filter out the frequency range and get rid of this noise. And then once you have all the artifacts removed, you need to binarize the images. And this is, in my opinion, the most crucial step in this whole procedure, because it determines the quality of all subsequent image analyses. And we got a little bit stuck with this, because there are over 70 documented kind of procedures that are based on different principles that you can apply to binarize images to find the gray level threshold. And basically all of those procedures, when you subsequently analyze the geometrical features of your images, give you different results. And I don't really have a good answer yet what kind of binarization method works best, and this is a big kind of focus area of us right now, to really get the better hold or better idea what to use to binarize. So then once you have your binarized images, you can reconstruct your 3D volume to visualize the pore space. And then you can do all kind of mathematical qualitative analysis to kind of determine aperture distribution, crack connectivity, topology, macro porosity. And these are the kind of parameters we basically want to use to kind of develop a model for crack evolution, and then subsequently develop a model for flow within a profile. But this is only kind of a slide that should illustrate this image binarization. So basically, each pixel is associated with one of the 256 grayscales. And now, when you look at the grayscale diagram, you need to find the segmentation threshold that separates each pixel either to the white side or to the black side, so it belongs to the pore space or to the matrix. And this is really a very, very tricky method. And when you look at publications that deal with X-ray computed tomography, nobody really speaks about this. And the reason is nobody really knows how to handle this, obviously. And we tested a wide variety of methods. And only to illustrate, and those methods, they're based on different principles. So they're based on the histogram shape, they're based on kind of statistical pixel parameters using grigging. Then you can to segmentation methods that are based on signal entropy and so on. So there are really many, many approaches. And we tested the ones we thought were the most reasonable ones, and only when we look at one of those samples and we compare the calculated macro porosity, you see deviations of up to 10%. So the lowest one was 31% macro porosity, highest one 42%. So you can imagine if you don't really know what's right, all subsequent analysis is some kind of not really very meaningful. And this is what they're struggling with right now. This slide only show what kind of, so we kind of coded everything in MATLAB and we basically developed codes to determine macro porosity based on voxel counting. And then lately we also started looking a little bit in how we can use isosurfaces to determine macro porosity. There's a little bit of debate what's the better way. Surface area, the same thing based on voxel-based methods and isosurfaces-based methods. Aperture distribution, we kind of use mathematical morphology operations with diamond-shaped structuring elements that we found gave us the best results for aperture distribution. Then we developed algorithms for crack depth connectivity and tortuosity. I'm only going to show you a few very preliminary results because we really thought it doesn't really make sense to analyze all those 450 samples we had without first figuring out what's the right way to binarize those images. So this image, those are digital images that show the evolution of those crack networks, so taken from the top for sodium bentonite, silica sand mixtures that were saturated with 0.05 molar sodium chloride solution. And of course you see as you increase the clay content, you basically increase the potential for cracking. So the higher the bentonite content, the more and the larger cracks develop and evolve over time. This image is for, so now we basically look at images where we increased the solution concentration to 0.5 molar sodium chloride. And you see that you basically see less crack development. And this is mainly due to the reduction in osmotic swelling. Basically, when you increase the solution concentration, you decrease the concentration gradient between the bulk solution, between the interplated spaces, which leads to, when you saturate it, when you hydrate it, lower swelling potential, then of course when you dehydrate it, to development of less cracks. And then when we look at calcium bentonite, saturated with 0.05 molar calcium chloride solution, we didn't see any distinct cracking. The only thing is when we went to very high clay contents or calcium bentonite contents, we saw rather detachment from the container surfaces than kind of really development of cracks, which is an indicator that those volumes that we were able to observe were basically too small to really picture this crack development and evolution. The next two slides only show the kind of data we obtain, and again, this data need to be looked at with caution because it's really more, at this point, more a qualitative analysis than a quantitative analysis. And this image only compare the aperture distributions for 20% sodium bentonite that was one time saturated with low concentrated sodium chloride solution, then with a little bit higher concentrated sodium chloride solution. And you see actually that this procedure gives you the data that you need to basically see when cracks initiate, how they evolve, and how basically this aperture distribution or macro porosity evolves with time. This is another example for 40% sodium bentonite, again one time saturated with 0.05 molar sodium chloride solution and one time with 0.5 molar sodium chloride solution. And again you see what kind of data you can obtain. I didn't really plot surface area connectivity data because at this point this was some kind of meaningless because we don't have a good grip on this binarization method. In this slide, they also mentioned that we're measuring swelling potential, so the maximum water ratio swelling potential we need to bring the samples to exactly this saturation before we dehydrate the samples. And then we also measured saturated hydraulic conductivity, and this is really important when you look at the liner performance, because you want to keep the hydraulic conductivity as low as possible to kind of make certain that this seals. But then, for example, if those liners are exposed to heat and municipal waste, for example, generates up to 90 degrees Celsius of heat, so there's a big chance that they actually dehydrate, then you also want to, at the same time, want to prevent excessive crack formation. So there is kind of a trade-off between those two things. And of course, when you increase the sand content, for example, you reduce cracking, but you also increase hydraulic conductivity. So those are kind of results that are quite important from liner design point of view. And then now this is my last slide, where I only give a brief overview about ongoing and future research. So really the most important thing right now for us is to resolve those binarization images. Without doing this or this other stuff, but doesn't mean much. And we also conducted a lot of experiments where we actually tried to amend bentonite with polyacrylamide to see if we can reduce swelling and also cracking when we dehydrate the samples. And we also used samples that were reinforced with polypropylene fibers, and those are kind of strategies actually that look very promising for liner design to reduce the cracking potential without reducing the sealant capacity of those liners. One thing we also figured out, we need to develop some kind of upscaling scheme, because we observed this crack formation on relatively small volumes. So we optimized it, but these were the largest volumes we could observe with this computed tomography system. But we need to find some kind of scaling relationships to actually scale this to larger volumes. And I have a feeling that to a certain level, this is a linear relationship with volume. And then the ultimate goal that Daniel and I are working on since quite some time, and we did also a lot of research on smaller scales, we really want to come up with a profile scale model for hydraulic behavior of those clay soils that considers crack formation as well as the effects of overburden distribution with depth. So this is the ultimate goal, but this probably will take us some more time to really come up with some meaningful models. With this, I'm going to conclude my presentation, and if there are time for questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. I think in the interest of time.